Happy Thursday, good people. Welcome to another edition of the Cool Soar Podcast. I hope you had a chance to check out our first Cool People episode this past Tuesday with Anthony AJ Joyner. And if you have a suggestion for someone who you think should be a part of that feature, please make sure you email us at cool@coolsoror.com. Welcome to another edition. And before we get to our Cool Soar feature of today, I would like to shout some folks out. Yes, I would. We have some folks who have given us a few reviews, and we always need your reviews because that is good for other people to find us. It's good for our placement on iTunes and all of that good stuff. So we need for you to make sure you are doing what you need to do for us. All right. So definitely want to take the opportunity to shout those folks out, and let me do that. Love the podcast. I love this podcast. This is from Miss Drea J. She said, I stumbled across it about 3 months ago and have been listening ever since. As a member of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, I love that I can hear what great things members of other D9 organizations are doing in their communities. This show has opened my eyes and my ears to how the men and women of the NPHC continue to make impacts with their respective D9 as well as organizations they may have founded as well. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, Theban596, a great interviewer. I guess he's talking about me. Can be real without losing professionalism. Insightful guests, everyday people doing extraordinary things. Definitely empowering. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. Empower with joy, Dr. N. Weed Kimbrough. Hey, Dr. Kimbrough. I love this episode. All power of thought and action are well within my soul. Miss Ali exemplifies Dr. Beckwith's intent work. Proud of my AUC sis from a cool Z5B soror. And Kimbrough. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for your love. Please make sure you're continuing to give us your feedback and also leave those reviews. They mean so much to us. Right now, we have a cool soror of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Her name is Charisma Atkins. I had the very pleasure of welcoming her into the Beta Alpha chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated on the campus of Florida A&M University. And she talks all about her work as an epidemiologist, her love for skincare, her battle, and how she is overcoming lupus and everything in between. She is truly the definition of somebody who is super cool. And this episode is aptly named Simply Charisma with Charisma Atkins. Enjoy. You know you gotta be a cool soror to talk to the cool soror herself.
I'm a cool soror.
Hey y'all.
I am a cool soror of.
What's up y'all? I'm a cool soror of.
Hi, I am a cool soror of.
Podcast hosted by me, Rashawn Ali. We are back. I think I start off every interview like that with another episode of the Cool Soror Podcast. And this is the second time I get to interview somebody that I actually was there to usher in into the land of the Beta Alpha chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. She is Charisma Atkins. And of course, I think I already said it for her. She's a cool soror of
Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.
How you doing, Rizzle Dizzle?
Hi, Rashawn.
I can't believe it. We finally made it.
Right.
I know.
Right. We've been playing this for a minute.
For a long time. Yeah. And she was like, she texted me last night, what time tomorrow? Not, are we still meeting tomorrow? Are we still going to interview? What time tomorrow? I'm supposed to be the big sister. What's going on in this dynamic here?
Yeah, I mean, we're friends.
All right. We really are friends. Before we're swords, we're actually our friends.
Yeah.
Well, Riz, you are a plethora of things, but one of the things that I love about you is that you are so loyal as a friend. Why do you, or what do you attribute to your loyalty in all the things that you do, especially friendship?
I don't know. I've always been loyal.
Yeah.
Like, it's never been a thought. It's not like I saw anybody not being loyal.
Right.
It's just like, that's what friends are.
Right.
Like, that's what you do. Like, mm-hmm. there's no discussion about it.
Yeah.
If I'm your friend, I'm dedicated and I'm loyal.
And you're going to ride for
I'm going to ride with you until you piss me off.
Yeah.
But nobody has ever pissed me off that I consider a friend.
Right.
So I've been loyal from day one.
Yeah. Is that, do you think that's a Sagittarius thing, or do you think it's a mixture of how you were raised, or...
No, I don't think most Sagittarius are not loyal.
Huh.
They are flighty. And they are, what most that I know that I've come into contact with.
Right.
They're more so kind of in your face.
Right.
And not necessarily loyal, maybe around when it's good for them to be around.
Okay.
But not loyal. I don't think it's loyal. I don't know. I guess it comes from my household. My mom is really loyal to her friends. She's had the same group of friends since she was like 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was what I said. Like, I just, it's just
part
in
of
me.
Your makeup.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it comes from being from Decatur, Georgia.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What up, Glenwood Road?
Yeah, you were raised in the Glenwood Road area, the real Decatur, Georgia.
The real Decatur,
when people
Georgia.
Think of Decatur, now they think of the new Decatur, you know.
No city of Decatur here.
Right.
This was Glenwood Road.
Glenwood Road, and you know, I'm right there around the corner, Columbia Drive, so we are real Decatur. Let's talk about Towers High School and your upbringing. Not Towers, you went to Lakeside.
You were supposed
to go to Towers High School.
Right.
Yeah. So you did the whole M2M thing like we did?
I mean, it wasn't my choice.
Right, it was your parents' choice.
My parents' choice. My mom was a teacher in APS.
Uh-huh.
And when we were going to school, me and my brother both went to Montessori first.
Oh, you did?
We went to Montessori first, and after Montessori, the teachers kind of cycled out, and my mom was like, we got to do something. And
right.
At the time, we were zoned. This was like, I was probably like in third grade. Yeah, I was in third grade. So we were zoned to Canby Lane.
Canby Lane. I knew you were about to say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the following year, I think we were zoned to Snapfinger.
Okay.
And my mom was like, no.
So you did the smooth M to M, yeah.
Yeah, she was like, well, there's this program. Well, not to me, but she told all the friends there was a program. And so we went to Oak Grove, me and my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the first ones on the street to go.
To bus. Yeah.
To bus. But not only to bus, we started the whole busing thing in the schools on the street. So, you know, back in the day, there were kids on the street and y'all was all about the same age.
Right.
And everybody pretty much did the same thing. And so we went to Oak Grove, and then the next year, our next door neighbor went, and then the following year, another kid down the street went. And so by the time seventh grade came,
everybody was there.
Everybody was at Oak Grove.
Yeah.
So we were all getting bused. So it wasn't a big to do. Parents weren't worried because everybody's child was
there
on the corner waiting for that bus in the morning.
Yeah. And so you then later on, you went to Lakeside. But let's fast forward. Like, why did you, Florida A&M, here we go again.
Yeah.
Why did you choose FAMU? What was it about Florida A&M that attracted you to Tallahassee?
Well, I always wanted to go to HBCU.
Okay.
Because I did go to, I was, you know, integrated into schools.
Mm-hmm.
All mixed schools, my whole upbringing.
So your whole high school year, you're like, I'm going to a black school.
Right. So my senior year, my counselor called me in, and she had all these schools. It was Duke. It was UNC. It was UF.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue was over there. And I was like, nope.
Right.
I'm not doing it. And my dad is from Quincy, Florida, which is right outside of Tallahassee. So I always knew about
FAMU.
I always knew about FAMU.
They said, you were about to say A&M?
Mm-hmm.
So I have, it's another Georgia Dawkins. She's going to be on Cool People one day. But she says her people always say A&M.
Yeah.
But they never say FAMU.
A&M.
So that's how it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He called it A&M.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, Hope was out.
Yeah.
And so people were really pushing to stay in the state because the Hope Scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was having no parts of it.
Right.
Me and my dad drove. We did like a college tour. And we went to, you know, all the Georgia schools, the big ones. And we got to Valdosta, and I refused to get out the car.
Wow. Because you didn't want to go to Valdosta State?
I didn't want to go to Valdosta State.
Right.
I wanted to go to A&M.
Uh-huh.
And him and my brother walked around the campus, and they loved it. In fact, my brother loved it. He went
right.
2 years later. But I wanted to go to A&M, and it was a big fight in my household over the money about A&M.
Yeah.
Big fight. And probably like the 2 weeks before we got out of graduation, President Humphreys came to Southwest DeKalb.
Oh, wow.
And my friend's dad lived over there, and he told my friend that, you know, President Humphreys was coming, and the word was he was passing out scholarships.
He always did that.
And so she told me, and I was like, well, I'm going.
Right.
And I was all the way at Lakeside. I had a car, drove from Lakeside to Southwest to cab.
Which is not a, that's not an easy drive, especially at 16, 17 years old.
Not at all. Not at all. Right. And I had a 5-speed hatchback Toyota Corolla. And
come
I
on,
was
Corolla.
Booking it down 285.
You so decayed. He said booking.
I was booking it down 285. And I got there, and sure enough, he was there. He was so big.
Like, right.
That's all I can remember. He was really big, and his presence was just like overwhelming. And I walked up to him, and he asked me what my GPA was. He asked me what I did. And asked me something about my extracurriculars. And then I told him, he asked me about my SAT, my ACT. And he was like, well, send me your scores and, you know, I'll see what I can do. Wow. And I'm just thinking like a partial scholarship so I could just quiet my daddy.
Right. Like, you're going to give us some money. Right.
And I sent him everything. And I had the summer before, I went to A&M for a biology program. And that was going to be my way to get in, but it was like a little partial thing.
Yeah.
And so when I contacted Humphreys, I told him, I said, well, I talked to Professor Pattimore, and he was like, oh yeah, you're into biology. And I was like, yeah, you know, at the time I wanted to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, okay. And so he didn't say anything. And so I graduated, and I was still like, I'm still going because I got this partial from Pattimore, like, it was no question.
So at this time you had already been accepted. You were just trying to
get
some scholarship money. Okay.
Yeah. And he came back. He was like, okay, I got you a scholarship. I was like, oh, great. I'm happy. He was like, it's almost a full ride.
Wow.
I said, oh, okay. And then when I got it back, he said it was almost a full ride because it didn't include the meal plan.
Okay.
But I had room and board and my
tuition. Wow.
And so I went, and I was like a little girl. I remember jumping out the car, and I shot my parents the deuces.
Wow.
Like, we went to Walmart and got everything.
Yeah.
They came back, and I was like,
ah. Yeah. And this was the fall of 95, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was good in the sophomore then.
Yeah.
And so you went and you majored in biology. You said you wanted to be a doctor initially.
Yeah.
What changed throughout the process?
Well, I wanted to be a doctor all the way through college.
Okay.
That was
okay.
My path.
That was your path. Okay.
Yeah, so my major was biology research. And I liked the research, and I liked biology because I was great at memorization. That's all biology is. Mm-hmm. It's just memorization. It's no applying of anything. It's just as long as you got a memory and you could, you know, jot things down, you're fine.
Right.
And I graduated and I went to work in the lab, and my first check in the lab was like next to nothing. Mm-hmm. And I remember it. And, I was like, well, I'm gonna try this pre-med program. So I went to UT for pre-med program after I graduated. And the first cycle was like a little surgery, like cycle.
Oh God, it took you out.
Sean.
It took you out.
When I tell you I saw that blood, I literally passed out.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, ooh.
This ain't for me.
And you know, I wanted to be a pediatrician, but my cousin at the time was in law and med school too. He had just finished Morehouse, and he was like, "Yeah, you have to go through each of the iterations of med school." So I have to go through all of this
to get to what you want, right?
I was like, "I'm not gonna make it."
So did you drop out immediately?
It was like a summer thing. It was like tried out.
Okay. Oh, just to see. Which is a great program because I'm sure there are a lot of people like you.
I said, well, I have to figure something else out.
Uh-huh.
So immediately I started studying for the LSAT.
Okay.
I did not want to be a lawyer. I just thought you study for one of these tests, you take the test, and something else will happen. But in the meantime, my dad had a friend that worked at A&M, and they were just now starting the public health school.
Okay.
Did not know what public health was, never heard of it. never heard of about avenues of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to go talk to the lady, and she said, you know, yeah, you'll be a good fit. At the time, because I had went back to A&M, I was a grad student in immunology.
Okay.
It's a section of biology. It's just talking about your immune system.
Right.
And I went to grad school, and while I was there, I hated it. Like,
you hated everything about immunology?
Yeah, I hated everything about it. Like, and I was a like an assistant professor for the department.
Okay.
So I had a lab, and I hated everything about it. So I said, I'll just try public health. And I went, and I actually loved it.
Wow.
Public health is like a hodgepodge of every single career you can think of.
Mm.
So you had lawyers in there, you had teachers, you had doctors, you had researchers, you had nurses, journalists,
right.
editors. Like, it's a hodgepodge of every single career that you can think of. And my goal was always science. So I immediately geared towards epidemiology because I just love science. And I got in the program, and I flew through it.
Yeah.
Like, flew through it.
What is epidemiology?
Epidemiology,
for those who don't know,
is the study of diseases and the impact those diseases have on the surrounding community.
Wow.
So it's all the diseases you would think of, everything from diabetes to HIV and things in between.
Yeah.
Global health, domestic health, even some veterinary science.
Yeah. So you'll always have a job.
I hope so.
Right. I'm just saying, but you're in need with everything that's running rampant in our country.
I hope so. And I think because public health, the difference between medicine and public health, medicine is person focused.
Okay.
You're trying to find a treatment, a diagnosis for one person.
Mm-hmm.
Public health, you're treating and diagnosing a whole population.
Got you.
So when I get into these programs or get into these disease research opportunities, I'm not looking at the individual. I'm looking at what the effect the disease has on a total community.
Okay.
What does flu do to a total community? What does rabies or diabetes or any of those conditions?
So this intrigues you, like every day when you log in and when you go to work, like it intrigues you.
Yeah. Especially when I'm in the field. Like, I love being in the field.
What's the field work like?
Field work is like when there's an outbreak, go to the school or to cruise ships or hospitals or anywhere that there's an outbreak of something. A lot of times it has to do with food. So I'm a big proponent on, you know, sanitation and making sure things are clean and safe. But it's more about just like what happened, like all of a sudden, why are these kids sick?
Yeah, what's the culprit? Like, you find the culprit.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
So what does that entail? Like, when you go, like when you do a site visit, like you taking dust prints? I mean, like, what are you doing?
So most of the time I have a bag that I take, and it has everything sanitation in there if possible.
Wow.
So it'll have gloves, masks, you know, sanitary wipes, and just making sure the environment is clean. And I usually begin with talking to whoever made the claim.
Okay.
Like, what is going on? And they tell me what is going on. If there's an issue with a person, then I try to go talk to that person and the persons that have been infected by that person. So
right.
If it's in the classroom, I try to talk to the child, and then I talk to all their friends, and then I talk to the friends of their friends. And so it's kind of like gathering them up to get as much information as possible.
And so you gather that information, and you then make a conclusion, and then you send that to whom at that point?
Well, you gather it up, and you get trying to find out what's the linkage.
Right.
If there's a linkage. Once you find the linkage, then you have to go back and do, and I don't typically do it, but there's a science team that comes in.
Okay, gotcha.
To find out, you know, where the avenue, the agent.
Right. So they get more in depth.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. I deal mostly with the individual, with the person.
Okay.
And then we, the science team and myself, come together and find out, try to figure out what the conclusion is. We write it up. We send it to our supervisors or to a leadership team. And from there, they decide what they want to do.
Right. You've done your part at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds fun. Now I get it. Okay, I get it. I never really like knew the breakdown. All you do is tell us in the group, get your flu shot this year. Right. And so you guys can see these trends coming way before they actually happen.
Absolutely.
How are you? I mean, I guess you're privy to that information because of where you work. But like, how do you all know, like, if it's going to be a bad flu season or a good flu season? Like, how do you know that type of stuff?
Well, there's a couple of things that goes into flu season. There's the weather patterns,
okay,
which in this day and age is kind of hard to tell because, you know, I hate to say it, global warming is all over the place. So traditionally, it's been the weather patterns predict the flu season in areas where they tend to have seasons. Now, Atlanta, we don't have seasons every single year.
Right.
But we still have a breakdown, a clear delineation of summer to fall to winter. Mm-hmm. And so we looked at those flight patterns and those of those seasons. Also, flu, most of the flu derivatives come out of China.
Okay.
So China has large labs for formalizing the flu vaccine, and the flu vaccine is made off of the previous flu season.
Mm-hmm.
So that's generally where it comes from. It comes from our partners over in China. The the flight patterns and weather that we see over here, and it kind of predicts when how the season is going to be.
That's
crazy.
And
you tend to usually have early on in the flu season, because flu season starts October 1. Mm-hmm. So early on, if there's anything before October 1, if there's a large amount of it, you can tell that it's going to be a heavy season.
Man.
And we've already had flu cases this year already.
Okay. So you definitely suggest for those who are into it to get flu shots.
Yeah. I definitely suggest it for pregnant women, mm-hmm. For people that are immunosuppressed, mm-hmm. meaning their immune systems are at risk. I do suggest it for children.
Yeah.
Of a certain age, I would say at least 10, because they are into everything. They are touching, they are with their co-parts. Mm-hmm. They have a high magnitude of getting flu.
Right. Astrid goes to doctor after podcast with older daughter. Seriously. Well, you know, Riz, you have such an amazing, unique leadership in this space, but you've battled with your own health issues with lupus.
Right.
When did you know that something was going on with you? Was this something that was diagnosed as a child? And you've done a beautiful job of managing lupus. So let's go back to when you knew something was going on.
Well, as a child, I was never sick. And my mom always used to say, my brother used to get sick with colds and flus all the time, but I never really got sick. What I used to do is I used to crack my knuckles a lot, like everything, my feet, my knuckles, my elbows. Like I would do that, and it would just drive my parents crazy.
Right. That would drive me crazy too. Right.
They didn't know why I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I did. Like it didn't hurt me. It's just something I felt like I needed to do. I did that all the way through high school.
Mm-hmm.
My cycle time, I got my cycle early.
Okay.
I got my cycle when I was like 11.
Okay.
And everyone around me, it wasn't a big deal, I don't think, but it became a big deal when I started getting heavy PMS.
Okay.
And I got heavy PMS. I think I was about 15 or 16.
Oh, your cycles were actually heavy. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my mom had never experienced it. My aunts had never experienced it. Nobody knew what it was. And I used to take these big pills. Like my dad would get them from his, like for his pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I would take them for my pain. They were big, like
gigantic,
got gigantic horse pills. And nobody really said anything. Like, so in my mind, I think that was probably the onset of
it. Yeah. Your body was telling you something was going on.
Going on. So that was about 15 or 16. And my cycles were just astronomical, like right. dumped over, not being able to go to school, checking out of school, not being able to
it
walk.
It was always a monthly ordeal.
Very much so.
Okay.
And it was clockwise.
Yeah.
It was by the book, by the calendar, mm-hmm. every single month. And so that happened in high school. Didn't really think much of it. My first year at A&M, I got the flu. Mm. First time I had ever in my life had a really bad cold like right. that. Checked into the hospital and they said, oh yeah, you have the flu. And so they sent me home. I had the flu probably for 2 weeks.
Man.
It was a long time.
Yeah.
I recovered and everything was fine. After I crossed, I went home and something wasn't right. Like I couldn't, no one could tell me what was going on, but something wasn't right.
And you knew.
And I knew. And I, at that time I had gained 45 pounds.
Okay.
Like
right.
in a matter of, you know, of course it was a freshman 15, but it was abundant. Like
right.
I had gained.
Like drastic weight gain.
Yeah. I had gained 45 pounds.
Man.
And I just worked to, you know, to lower it down. I stopped eating in the cafeteria. It was easy because I was doing AKA stuff. So
right.
it was always
doing
in and
stuff,
out,
right.
doing stuff. So I just let it be. And I just finished school and I was in grad school. And at the time there was only me and one other Sora, Jenny. Me mm-hmm. and Jenny were in Tallahassee together. And she was big on walking in this forest. I don't know. It was by her house mm-hmm. and she would do the trail. And so one day I just joined her mm-hmm. and I started, you know, working out with her and it was just peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I had learned I had fibroids.
Okay.
I went in, I had my fibroids taken out and I felt like a new woman.
Right.
Like, they were gone. The weight was coming off.
Right, right, right.
I was walking with her. So I felt great. Went to public health. And like I said, I zoomed through public health because I liked it so much. But I guess it was kind of stressful because I was always in some type of class or mm-hmm. doing something. And these Christmas vacation of 2000, the end of 2000.
Okay.
I went home. I had finished my first year of public health. Went home, got into bed, just like I normally do, was tired at my parents' house. And the next morning, I tried to get out of bed and could not move.
Wow.
Could not move. My mom was probably at work or my dad was somewhere. And the only person there was my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in his bedroom and our bedrooms were next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I just called for him, you know, called him, said, come help me get up. So he, you know, he fussed.
Right.
He fussed. So he was like, why don't you get up? So I mustered up enough strength to get up, but my limbs weren't moving the way they should. My legs weren't operating. And I was just out of it. So my parents, you know, felt like I was tired. And then this time, the weight had started coming.
It came back.
No, it went away. Like as much as I gained it, uh-huh. I lost it that
okay,
quick.
Okay, okay.
It just kept going and going and going. So my mom pumped me with these proteins. We had Ensure milk. I was drinking Ensure milk for every meal. And just trying to figure out what was going on. And finally, they took me to the doctor. And my dad's doctor was Dr. Williams out of Emory. He was just a regular physician.
Right.
And while we were waiting in the lobby, this commercial for lupus came on.
And it was like all your symptoms.
All my symptoms.
Oh, my gosh.
So I freaked out. And when I got into the lobby, first of all, they had to wheel me in the lobby in a wheelchair because I couldn't walk. And watching that thing pop up on that screen, I was just like, that's what I have.
And you knew.
That's what I had. And so he called me back there. He ran all the tests. And a day later, he was like, yeah, you have lupus. And I'm just thankful that because my lupus diagnosis is different when I go around and I talk to the different lupus groups.
Yeah, because it's all different. They all look different, right?
They all look different. But one of the most common characteristic of it is that it's so hard to diagnose.
Oh.
And a lot of people go through different things. They get back surgeries. They get knee replacements.
Not even knowing.
Yeah, they get their hips looked at. And I just knew something wasn't right. That morning when I could not get out of bed, like literally could not
move. Right.
That was my showing.
Mm-hmm.
So he recommended me to another doctor, an older guy who had been dealing with lupus his whole career. And I went over there and he said, yeah, you have lupus. Take this steroid and I'll see you next week.
Mm.
I took the steroid, felt like a new woman. Jumped out. I went shopping. Oh, me and my God. Mom, like,
she loves shopping, y'all. I mean, like, it's a bad thing.
Yeah. I felt so good. I was like, because while I was in grad school, because I was studying so much,
you attributed to something totally different,
right?
Yeah,
I guess I was studying so much I didn't even think about it, and then I start thinking, like, I used to get the headaches, but I always thought they were from something else. I used to get my fingers would swell and my joints would swell, but I thought it was something else. So I just always thought it was stress from grad school, from me trying to get it, like, because in my mind I felt like I was losing time. Like, mm-hmm. I was 22. I was like, I got to get it. I got to get out and make some money. That was my whole goal. So I just thought it was just grad school. And when I went home that Christmas and I could not move, I knew
something was up.
Something was up.
Yeah. Yeah. So how are you successfully? I mean, you do get times when you do get sick, and thank you for telling us now. We appreciate that. But you do a beautiful job of managing and making and staying on top of your health, because I know that it shows up differently in everybody. But what gives you the zest to make sure that you are on top of your health care like you are?
Well, I think it's a persona, because it took me a long time to get here.
Yes, it did.
It took me a very long time to get here. I would say, like, the first 5 years or so, I just wouldn't accept the diagnosis. I would take that prednisone, I would take my medicine, and I would still drink or smoke, uh-huh, or whatever I wanted to do. I just like, yeah, it's a part of my life. Let me take this pill.
Right.
I'm going to keep doing what I'm
doing.
You
didn't change a lot of your behaviors.
At all. Like, nothing.
Right.
And over time, I had a doctor when I lived in Florida. He told me, he was like, you're going to have to change some things. Like,
yeah.
And so while I was in Florida, because I was just doing that, the lupus started affecting my kidneys.
Wow.
And so that literally is what woke me up.
Mm-hmm.
But when it started affecting my kidneys, I had a regular doctor's appointment. I went in and my blood pressure was so high, they checked me into the hospital. And they couldn't understand why I wasn't falling out, why I wasn't lightheaded, because my blood pressure was really, really high. And they did some diagnosis. They checked me out. It was like, your kidneys are failing.
Oh my goodness.
And at the time, I think it was like, I had like maybe 50% functioning. It went from like 80 to 50%.
When did you tell me in part of this story? Did you tell
me
this time?
I didn't tell, because I was in Florida. So this was the time.
Right. This was maybe the first time something was happening.
Time,
oh my.
Something was happening.
Okay.
And I didn't tell anybody because, A, I didn't want to be in Florida, so I was traveling back and forth between Florida and Atlanta all the time.
Which wasn't good for your health, I'm sure.
And B, I just, again, I was still like,
kicking
okay,
it. Yeah.
I'm going to take this pill. I'm going to take, now I got some kidney medicine. I'm going to do this, but I'm still going to live my life.
Mm.
And then it just, something just clicked. Like maybe the second, no, maybe the third hospitalization.
Yeah.
I was like,
okay,
let me get a handle on this.
Yes.
At the time, I was probably like 30. Yeah, I was like 30. I was like, okay, it's it's time. My kidney functions had steadily been declining. They had gone all the way down from, like I said, when I was first diagnosed, it was probably about 80%, to when I was diagnosed with kidney disease, it was probably about 50%. And then the last hospitalization was, it was, had gotten all the way down to 9.
My goodness.
And that is when that's what scared me.
Yeah.
Like, that scared me. With it, then they started talking about transplant, mm-hmm, and dialysis. And in my mind, everybody I knew that was on dialysis died.
Mm.
And I was like, nah, I'm not doing dialysis.
Yeah.
So I did infusion, which is like chemotherapy. And it brought my functions back up.
Right.
And that's where I am now. So yeah. Right now I'm excellent. Like,
yeah.
I don't have any problems with my doctors or with me. But all of this time I was still dibbling, dabbling and working out. Mm-hmm. I hadn't gone full throttle like I am now.
Yeah.
But when I did go full throttle, that's when it improved. When I started, yes, changing my diet, when I started changing my workout patterns, getting more sleep, because I wasn't sleeping a whole lot, and that's when it started improving.
Right. And then you see Riz came around. She's like, ma'am, just have some wine. And we're like, who is it? And then, you know, at first she really wasn't telling us what was going on. And then she finally told us, and we were like, yes, wine, yeah, for Riz.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and you do everything in moderation now, which, right, is, which is so beautiful. And it's just, I love how you are like a poster child for really taking a grasp of your diagnosis. Have you thought about like even being more vocal than what you are with your lupus?
I have, and I struggle with it because innately I am a very private person. Yeah.
Tell me about it. Okay, go ahead.
I am very, yes, private.
Yes.
Only there are some family members don't even know. They don't.
Well, about 210,000 people are gonna know now.
So. But I'm a private person,
yeah,
and also everybody's lupus is different.
Yeah.
If people reach out to me personally, I talk to them. I have probably about 10 young ladies that I talk to.
Oh, okay, good.
On a regular basis.
Okay, good.
That, you know, we kind of help each other or cycle through like whatever is going on, you know, share doctors and, mm-hmm, things like that. But I am a private person.
Yeah.
I am a private.
So, but you're doing it on the level of your comfort.
I am. I've gotten more avenues out because at this point right now I'm going on 17 years, mm-hmm, with lupus. And it's fortunate for me that I've never had physical manifestations of lupus.
Okay.
I've never had the butterfly mark, which is generally people that have lupus, they have what is a mark on their face and it looks like a butterfly.
Okay.
And you can,
is it lighter or darker?
It's darker.
Okay.
And you see it more so on either light-skinned African Americans or Jewish women, mm-hmm, or even some Spanish. But I've never had it. Not even when I was a little bit lighter than I am now, mm-hmm, because with the kidney disease, it kind of takes some of your skin preservation,
mm-hmm,
and it darkens it a little,
oh, okay,
bit.
Okay. Okay.
So you kind of gradually get darker. So even when I was a little bit lighter, I still never had the butterfly mark.
Right.
And so it's my diagnosis and my cycle has been different. Like, yeah. And most people start off, whatever they start off with is usually what they have.
Okay.
And it doesn't really turn.
It didn't change.
Like,
okay.
A whole lot. And so for me, mine started off really mild and then it shifted with the kidneys. But that's still not always. It doesn't always happen. So you have to approach everyone's process
differently.
A little,
yeah,
differently.
Yeah. So you can't judge like, well, she takes care of her lupus, but her lupus is totally different,
right,
from yours. Got it.
Right.
Got it.
Right. And different people have different ways of how they accept it and they express it that I've learned. And I can attest to, like, when I was first diagnosed, I didn't want to hear about anybody with lupus. I don't want that on me. And so people have to be very open and very able to accept what I'm telling them.
Yeah.
At this point, with 17 years of with lupus, probably about 10 or so with kidney disease. So you have to be very acceptable to receive what I'm going to tell you.
Right.
And my personality is not to sugarcoat it. So I'm not going.
No, it's not.
I'm not going to baby you. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to whoa.
Well, you don't do that naturally. So definitely not going to do it with that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know, I might shed a tear with you because I do have a soft spot for, especially for young girls. Like, I recently had a debutante that was diagnosed with lupus.
Yeah.
And even though I was in my early 20s, I can't imagine having to change your whole lifestyle and your whole being
as a teen,
at 16 years old.
Yeah.
Someone telling you can't have chicken or you can't have beef or you can't do this and you can't do that. But all of your friends,
It's a lot. Yeah.
And it's a lot for that.
But thankfully she has you.
Right.
Yeah. And then you met her in a leadership type, you know, mentoring type role. So you never know what that relationship, you know, how beneficial is going to be for her.
Right.
Wow. Wow, Riz, what an amazing, we haven't even gotten to, let's talk about Simply Charisma, because you do have a passion for skin care and like beauty and aesthetics and all of that. What made you change your direction or add that to your love of biology and science?
Well, I've always been into skincare.
Yeah.
I had acne as a teenager.
Uh-huh.
And I hated it. I used to put my mom's Fashion Fair all over my
face.
Come
on, Fashion Fair, stop the cat, mom.
Yeah, put Fashion Fair all over my face. So I hated having acne. And I had a dermatologist when it wasn't fashionable, when it wasn't a part of insurance. So I've always had a dermatologist. And my first dermatologist, he put liquid nitrogen on my face.
Ooh.
And so for all my dermatology friends out there, imagine putting liquid nitrogen on somebody's face.
Wow.
It burns like the heavens.
Yes.
And so I've always was into skin because I had issues with my own skin.
Mm-hmm.
My mom had perfect skin. My dad's skin, you know, it was my dad, so he didn't really care too much about it. My brother has perfect skin. And so it was me. And I was like,
why I get this skin?
Right. Where did this come from? Right. So I've always been into it. When I first got to A&M, it started on its own, just started going away. Like, it just, to me, it felt like I woke up, I went to bed, and I was putting Clearasil or whatever I was using on my skin. And then the morning I woke up and I had a fresh new layer of skin.
Wow.
Like, that's what it felt like to
Right.
me.
Right. Maybe the environmental change or your body just said, all right, good. We're good.
Yeah. And so I do think it had a lot to do with hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, from there, I've always been into skin. I've always been into skin and hair. I come from one of those families where that's what we did every Thursday. I mean, not every 2 weeks on Thursday, me and my mom would hit the shop.
Right.
Get us laced or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I've always been into it. As I grew, I learned about the industry of beauty because it was never an opportunity for me. It's not something that back then in, you know, early 90s that was advertised. Like, we had the videos and we saw the women on the videos and they were all beautiful.
Right.
We saw all that. But nobody,
you didn't know what went into that.
Nobody ever told you that there is actually a career for skincare that doesn't involve being a doctor. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever told you that. And so once I learned about it, I decided to go to aesthetic school in 2010. Yeah, 2010. And From there, I just fell in love with it. I love all things skincare.
Yeah, Simply Charisma. Now you just kicked off, like you were doing it like on the low, and now you're like, okay, right. This is what I love to do. So tell everybody about Simply Charisma, what you offer, and how they can get your services.
Okay, Simply Charisma is a full service beauty and aesthetic salon. I'm located right now in East Atlanta, 532 Flat Shoals Avenue, and I focus on the preservation, protection, and the security of skin. Mm-hmm. I will help you reach your goals, but I am not going to maneuver your skin in any way. That mm-hmm. means I won't do any Botox. Mm-hmm. I won't do any injectables. I focus on the true preservation of your natural skin.
Okay.
So that's facials, chemical peels, microdermabrasions, any of the beauty treatments that don't require artificial assessment.
Right.
And then on top of that, I'm very much into brows and lashes. Mm-hmm. So I focus on brows. I focus on lashes. I'm getting right now into the teeth whitening. Mm-hmm. I have a class on that that's coming up.
Oh, okay. Come on, teeth whitening.
So that's what Simply Charisma is.
Good.
And then, of course, I also do all the other aesthetic treatments. Mm-hmm. Waxing. I wax your head from head to toe.
What? I didn't know you did all that.
Yes.
Come on, Riz. I didn't think you would be into that. Well, not into it, but you know, that's been a stretch, I'm sure.
It's been a stretch. But, you know, when for a woman in this day and age, if they don't get anything done, mm-hmm. they're getting their hair done, mm-hmm. and they getting waxed.
Yes.
They are. It's like those clockwork.
Yes, it is. I go, yep. Once a month, I gotta go. Yeah. Gotta be like, oh, this is unacceptable.
Right.
So yeah.
It's like clockwork.
Yeah.
So Simply Charisma is, she's my baby. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's my name. I love my name now. So And it has a lot of characteristics that I believe that I possess. And I just love it. Like every time I see a woman come in there, especially a woman that's either downtrodden or is just not comfortable in their own skin. And just to see them pop up out their bed and I give them the mirror and they be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were already beautiful, but thank you for enhancing what I already have.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So
that's awesome.
So I love that part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. In the spring of 1997, you became a member of the Beta Alpha chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Did Alpha Kappa Alpha choose you or did you choose Alpha Kappa Alpha?
Come on now. Come on now. Okay. Right. So my mom.
Oh, the epitome.
Is epitome.
Right.
Of Alpha Kappa Alpha. Mm-hmm. From Alpha Pi chapter.
Yes.
And so I was born into Alpha Kappa Alpha, not only but through my mother, through all of my aunts.
Yes.
There is not one single woman in my family that is not an AKA.
Wow.
That is of age.
Wow.
Not a one. And so Alpha Kappa Alpha chose me.
Yeah.
I'm born into it. My bedroom was pink and green.
Hilarious. Hilarious.
Everything has been pink and green.
Your whole life.
My whole life.
Yes.
So there was no other option. But I will say, when I got to A&M, this coming from Decatur and from the sorors that were on the yard,
yeah,
I wasn't going to do it.
Uh-huh.
Because they were not like me. Like
ain't see me? You ain't.
I didn't see you until probably spring 96.
Really? What was I doing? Oh,
was campaigning.
I was campaigning. And then I was just trying to help the chapter get back right.
But when I first got there, so my mom was, you know, my mom's prissy. She's mm-hmm. typical Alpha Kappa Alpha woman. So when I got there, that's how the ladies were. They were prissy and I just wasn't prissy.
Right.
I came on the yard with Tommy Hilfiger
shorts. So did we. I can't believe I wasn't around. What am I doing?
Right. So I was like,
right.
And then, like I said, in spring 96 during campaign season,
mm-hmm.
I heard your voice and I was like,
who is that?
And I think I asked, it might have been Danielle or one of my other friends. I was like, who is that? They was like, oh, that's Rashawn. She from Decatur. You don't know her? I was like, no. I gotta meet her.
Right.
So I met you, and then I met the rest of you. Kendra.
Right.
All of you all that were running for office at the time, where y'all were graceful and y'all were beautiful, but y'all was turned. I was like, I like it. I didn't feel the need to have to,
like, yeah,
to get it together.
So right. You could be you.
I could be me.
And that's exactly, I think that's the beauty of it all, when you can truly be who you are.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome. What is your definition of, I usually ask, I know you and your alliance are still close. I already know the answer to that. But just for people who don't know, you all had an amazing 20-year reunion. Of course, we're coming up on homecoming in a couple of weeks.
Right.
I know y'all, because I take so much pride in this line because, I mean, for obvious reasons, but I'm just excited to see what you guys have in store coming up at homecoming.
Oh, you know. You know how.
I mean.
You know how 97 do.
Yeah.
We're extra.
Yes.
But we're down to earth.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah, I can't
wait. It's going to be a good time.
I know it's going to be a real good time.
Yeah.
What is your definition of cool charisma?
Cool to me is knowing who you are, but accepting who you are.
Oh, that's good. Yes.
Everyone believes that they know who they are, but when you truly accept who you are, both positive and negative, I think, you know, you on a whole different path of understanding and knowing oneself.
That is so good. I'm cool then.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it took me a while to, for people to like, dang, she cool. But then to realize, like, my truth and my coolness.
Right.
Oh, I'm nuts level with mine now.
Right.
You can't tell me nothing.
Right. Like, and that's the whole goal. Like, once you know yourself, can't nobody come to you and try to persuade you to do anything you don't want to do.
Right. Or be anybody
you are not. You don't want to be. So accepting who you are and knowing who you are, man, you on a pathway out of here.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing.
I love it. And you are a beautiful thing that I'm looking at right now. Simply Charisma. How can people find you, make an appointment, follow you on the gram, all that? She keep it real on the Facebook. On the Facebook, too.
On the Facebook. I do keep it real.
Right.
You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Snapchat as Simply Charisma.
Very, very simple.
Very simple. It's Simply Charisma on all social media. Come see me in East Atlanta Village, 532 Flat Shoals Avenue.
Do you have a phone number for that, or just make the appointment online?
Make the appointment online.
Okay.
All of the appointment details are on Facebook and Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been an absolute joy and pleasure. We finally got it done, and it just blew my socks off. And I know the collective feel the same way. Charisma, thank you so much. I'm so proud to be your big sister. I'm so proud, more importantly, to be your friend and to walk this journey of life with you.
Thank you.
Yes. Charisma Atkins, everybody.
Hey, this is Charisma Atkins. I am the owner of Simply Charisma Beauty Aesthetic Salon, and I am a cool soror of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.